So this is one of the cases where I don't have a ton of information. Usually we watch old TV shows and, you know, I go dig up information about them, but sometimes I don't. Sometimes I want to kind of go in blind and not know, to try to be surprised. Because everybody, you know, nowadays you can be an instant expert in anything if you just look up some stuff. So in this case, it's a movie that I've just been meaning to watch for a while because it just keeps coming up. I keep hearing about it and it sounds interesting. And I was just like, oh, let's just go in without knowing too much. So it's a movie from 1993 called Matinee, but it takes place during the Cuban Missile Crisis. When was that?
Cuban Missile Crisis, 1961, I believe, or maybe 62.
So thereabouts, but
61 or 62. Apparently, the Russians were had missile bases set up in Cuba, and were kind of in bed with Fidel Castro. And the Americans feared that there was going to be a strike made on the United States from Cuba, which is very, very close. So the it was kind of like a standoff. Went on for a few days, and then the Americans held their ground, and the Russians apparently backed off, and Cuban Missile Crisis was over. But that was the age of bomb shelters. Everybody had their bomb shelters in their backyard, and were all set up for that. And I don't remember this in school here. But in the United States, it was very, very big where kids were trained on how to deal with a nuclear bomb blast, you know, hide under your desk and that sort of thing, as if that would do you any good. But anyway, that was what the deal was. And I don't know the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't know how long. I was just a kid then when all that happened. I remember there being air raid sirens around here. And there would be air raid tests, and you'd hear these sirens going off. But that's really all I remember about it as a kid. Now I know a whole lot more about it since then, as I grew up and I read about it.
And yeah, that was obviously all before my time, but whatever I know is just from, you know, movies and video games and stuff. But speaking of, as far as people hiding under their desks and stuff, this guy from the Fallout video game. So in Fallout, you know, it's post-nuclear apocalypse, hundreds of years in the future, everything's been destroyed. It basically, it's like, what if all that stuff really happened in the 50s and everyone got nuked? So this guy, because, you know, he looks so happy, right? This is the Fallout boy. This is the Pip-Boy. He's like their mascot. And, you know, it looks like a thumbs up. But what this actually is, apparently this is a thing they actually told people in the 50s, was if you see a mushroom cloud on the horizon, hold up your thumb. And if it's smaller than your thumb, you're okay. If it's bigger than your thumb, run.
Really?
I don't know if that's even true, but that's
Well, no,
insane, right?
but it sounds like something that would be true. That would have been promoted at the time.
Yeah, like if not true, it does sound like something they would say in those like
Yeah, I mean, and
1950s
not true
times.
in the sense, but I mean just the fact that somebody would say something like that, government, whatever, that sounds true that they would say that. Now, of course, it's absolutely ludicrous. Even hiding under your desk is
Yeah, all
absolutely,
that.
that's ludicrous too, but that's what little children were taught to do. Even hiding in your bomb shelter, you know, but I guess some of these bomb shelters were quite fancy and had enough canned goods stored in them to do you for 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, I mean the bomb shelter at least maybe would work to some degree. I mean, you know, arguably it's over worrying about the situation, but at least that's something. But yeah, I love that little Fallout guy because it's such a perfect
Yeah,
emblem of.
he's so positive. He's got, you know, thumbs up. Hey, there are bombs coming at you, but hey, thumbs up. You can survive.
Yeah.
But no, that's really, yeah, now that you're explaining it, that probably is what people were told. Yeah, but hold your thumb up.
Yeah, because especially that one era, the 50s in
It's bigger
particular,
than your thumb.
people just seemed to be kind of, it seemed like a historical high point for people being full of shit. It was the 1950s, you know, like right after the war, but before the 60s when everybody kind of got real. That was the Leave It to Beaver era of like, let's just pretend everything is okay. No problem.
And yet they were living in extreme fear of the communist devil, the communist threat, because if the Americans had the nuclear bomb, so did the Russians. And yeah, and people lived in this constant fear of nuclear war, but on the other hand, they were you know, happy, living in their perfect houses with their perfect meals and their perfect families and their perfect, simple, lovely TV. You know, what a strange time. Like, they just come through World War II, which was so devastating, particularly for people in Europe, and not so much in North America. They just come through that, though, and then they go into this kind of, almost like a dream world. Like, you're living in this world of fear and threats of nuclear bombs, but yet you're living in this little, I don't know, saccharine, sugary world, too. Like, weird.
Did you ever see the movie Pleasantville?
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's like the kid who idolizes the old, it's like an Andy Griffith type show, and then he gets teleported into the world, but he brings his no good slutty sister also, and she basically ruins society by having casual sex with people, and yeah, the black and white people start to turn into color people, and yeah, it just is a neat movie. But so that's the basic backdrop. Again, I don't know a ton about this movie because I didn't look it up too much. I just know that's the basic backdrop, the basic time. But the actual movie, since it's called Matinee, it's John Goodman runs a movie theater, and it's like this movie theater where they are really trying to, you know, to get people to keep coming to the movies. Like, just weird stuff. Like, if they show a scary movie, there'll be like a skeleton that comes out, or they'll blow wind on your face or whatever. And I think they did do that to some degree back in the day. And I think that's interesting that that has come back around. Like, I always thought of 3D movies as like a 1950s thing. But 3D movies in the 21st century came back. And now they have a thing called the 4D movie. I only did this one time for like a Fast and the Furious movie, and it's too much. It's like your chair shakes and vibrates while the car's driving. And yeah, they'll blow wind in your face and spray you with water and all this crap. So anyway, this movie, though, was about a guy. I don't even know if he's the main character. I think there's like some kids having some kind of adventure. But the basic backdrop is that it's the era of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and this guy runs this movie theater where he does all this cool stuff to freak people out. And other than that, I don't know. But and it's directed by Joe Dante, he's the guy who's most famous for directing the Gremlins movies. And I mentioned him to you the other day about how he's the guy when they were throwing away props while he was out there filming something. They're like, you want any of this crap? And one of them was one of the three sleighs, the rosebud sleds from Citizen Kane. So he's like, I'll take that, please. And now it's worth ungodly amounts of money. So again, that's all I know about him, too, is just he's a smart cookie and he directed Gremlins. So he directed this movie. I just hear about it once in a while. And I'm like, that movie where John Goodman runs the movie theater, it just sounded interesting, but I've never seen it.
Well, let's check her out then.
Hopefully it does have something to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis. If not, just consider that a free history lesson, I guess. But I'm pretty sure that for that to have come up, for me to know that, that must work into the plot somehow, I presume. Probably not just someone going like, hey, did you hear about that Cuban Missile Crisis? Let's go to the movies. You know, there's probably more to it than that. But anyway, yeah, so Matinee from 1993, directed by Joe Dante, is what we will be diving into this week.
Yes, the atomic bomb is terrible. But more terrible still are the effects of atomic mutation. Hello, I'm Lawrence Woolsey. And I want to warn you about something that could happen. Something that does happen in my newest motion picture. Observe the ant. A miniature marvel of social cooperation and prodigious strength. But if a man and an ant were exposed to radiation simultaneously, the result would be terrible indeed, for the result would be Mant.
So yeah, for a movie that I really, you know, again, I didn't know much about, it'd just be like every, like, I don't know, like every 5 years or so, I would just hear about this, somebody would mention it, and I'd be like, wait, what is that movie people mention once in a while? And I'd say it turned out pretty good. I like that movie.
I like that movie, too. Had a lot of stuff going on in there. It wasn't just about making a horror movie. It had a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, like I was saying at first, like, if the whole thing was about John Goodman just running his horror movie empire, I would have been fine with that. But yeah, the more I watched it, I'm like, yeah, but this is definitely a more robust movie the way it is. It's kind of neat, too. The Cuban Missile Crisis, in some ways, is a great touchstone because you can still do a sort of feel-good movie that has historical significance or like a specific place in time. Where, yeah, for my particular lifetime, like the only thing that really comes to mind is 9/11, and you could never make a movie like this about that because it did happen. You know, it didn't get called off. There is no feel-good ending. So in some ways, the Cuban Missile Crisis is just the right historical event.
Yeah, and it had just enough about the Cuban Missile Crisis in it to just give you a little bit of history, a background as to why people would be so freaked out about this kind of stuff and how they'd buy into that movie so much, like the terror of the movie. I mean, people really bought into that because in their real world, they were facing the fact that there could have been a nuclear explosion that would have killed them all. And they were trying, this was the escapism that matched it. And it just fit right in. The timing was perfect for it.
Yeah, I loved how in the first like 2 minutes of the movie, just how irreverent they were. Again, like you could never do this except about a historical event that didn't happen, that, you know, there wasn't a terrible thing that happened, because John Goodman, he starts off with the terrors of the atomic war, the atomic bombs. But what isn't always spoken about is what can happen to a person exposed to radiation. And it immediately is about Mant and, you know, the man who turns into an ant and total BS. But yeah, it's like fun to, or like the way they can show, you know, the president on TV and they can show historical footage of people being worried. But then it's still okay for that to be in the background. And then you move on to the other stuff that's happening. Where if this was about a more heavy, historical thing that had bigger consequences, it would feel disrespectful to do that. But here it can be a background.
Well, and it was just trying to show how the average Joe Q citizen was reacting to this. Some people were very concerned, like the mother whose husband was off on the ship out in the Cuban harbor. She had a different outlook on it than her kids did. John Goodman was totally sacrilegious about the whole thing. You know, he was just out to make money at whatever it cost. You had the fellow who was his crony there, who was watching the news all the time. So he was caught up in all that stuff. He had the bomb shelter and all that sort of stuff. So you really just saw how your average Joe Q citizen would have responded to it, rather than them focusing on the political action that was going on at the time. And you could imagine yourself, yeah, like, what if I was just Joe Q citizen? What if I was some kid in school and I was being told all this stuff? Like, how would I react? What if I go to this movie? And even while I'm watching the movie and I want to see the terror and the horror in the movie, in the back of my mind is the fact that maybe there will be a nuclear explosion while I'm in this theater. You know, it was a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's kind of neat too, because I guess in my lifetime, I mean, I was very young, but I'm a little aware of like the Cold War stuff between America and the USSR and that impending doom feeling. But this one was that, but much more real. Like they really were just across the bay with actual weapons. You know, it wasn't conceptual. It was really possibly going to happen. But yeah, it is a good way to get like that little taste of the era without watching a dry documentary, you know, like with probably a little more real feeling in some ways of like this really would be what it was like. And like the stuff we were talking about with the Fallout thumb, they did have all that stuff of like, all right, it's a bomb raid warning, or we're doing a bomb, you know, like a fire test or whatever. What do they call that?
Well, it was like a bomb drill.
What would you do?
But how would you react? And all the kids go out in the hallway and...
And yeah, like hide under the desk
or whatever. And hide their heads under their arms. Going.
And the kid later is like, yeah, he's on the phone with his mom. Yeah, I know. Like duck down, put my jacket over my head. Like all this nonsense.
But it wasn't nonsense for them. So you had people, which is how people do react in situations. If something terrible could go on in the world, you still have to carry on. So sometimes you look at, okay, what is the bright side of this? And the bright side was that they were all going to go to this movie and be terrorized.
Right.
Meanwhile, in the real world, some terrible things could have happened to them and they would have just been obliterated. But, you know, you just can't live. You can't live in that world of constant fear. And they weren't. They were off, you know, making up with their boyfriends and their girlfriends and planning for a dance and planning to go here and planning to go there. And that's just what people do. They just carry on.
And then for, yeah, the more frivolous side of it, but you can tell that part was still also really robust. Like Joe Dante didn't write this, he just directed it, but you can tell he's like, you can feel his knowledge about movies. Like, it's not a coincidence that he's the guy that recognized the Citizen Kane sled when no one else did. Like, you can just feel this guy knows a lot about movie history, because even though the movies in this are made up, you know, we've all seen those movies of those kinds. And I like that it just has that reverence for cinema. You know, John Goodman is like, he loves the theater and the movies and the pictures and, you know, all this stuff. Because I remember I felt that way a bit when I got a job at a movie theater, where I was like literally the last wave of people who got to be projectionists. This was in like 2006 or so that I got that job, before it all went digital. Like, nowadays, being a projectionist is not a job. You know, you just, it's just a computer that plays the movie. So I was the last wave of people that learned how to take film off reels and thread it through a machine and, you know, all that stuff. And I thought it was so cool of just learning how it all works and how to thread a projector and all that stuff. And even the emulsion that comes off of a film that you have to clean out of the machine, it's like purple. It's pretty, you know, like movie magic. And I remember, like, my closest thing to, like, the way he's putting on this show and he wants everybody to, you know, have a time or whatever, is I was at the midnight showing of the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which those movies kind of got worse and worse, but no one knew that was going to happen yet. The first one was a really good movie, so everyone was really excited for the second one. And it was the midnight showing, and, you know, only the most hardcore people are staying up till midnight to watch a 3-hour freaking Disney movie. But just before it started, so there's like the in-between part where there's the pre-show that at that point was digital, like low-resolution digital, and then it would turn off and everything was quiet for a moment while I had to turn on the projector to switch to the projector for the real movie. And in that little moment where everything was quiet, it's like a porthole on a ship or something. Like, I had to pull down the handle, pull down my window, because I'm supposed to be, you know, soundproof, separate from the theater. I'm not supposed to even open that thing. I opened it up and I just yelled through, "Pirates 2, yeah!" And the whole crowded theater went, "Woo!" And I was like, sweet, movies are cool. And then there's the other side of the job where I ruined prints and I destroyed a whole print of Superman Returns because I threaded it wrong and scratched the whole thing. But, you know, there's downsides too. But I'm just glad I got to learn about, I feel like it's like learning how to make a samurai sword. It's this useless skill. I'll never be able to use that, but I'm glad I got to learn how that all worked while it still existed. So this movie kind of gave me that kind of feeling too, of like, this guy loves movies. This guy cares about movies. And yeah, it's
well,
just neat.
And see, this is like the last hurrah for movies. This is, well, it's, let's give it another 10 years beyond. This is set in like the early 60s. But by the time the 70s are coming along, movie theaters had changed. That whole format of what a movie theater looked like that big long theater with the balcony, they were starting to change so that they were moving into malls and you were getting like 10 theaters, maybe a good sized one, and then down to a little tiny one in your 10 theaters, different than just the theater that was there, the movie theater that was in your town, and you had matinees and you had a 7 o'clock show and you had a 9 o'clock show and everybody went to the movies. That was your big thing when you went out with your girl. You went to the movies, then you went to the malt shop afterwards, and that's what made your evening. That was changing. So this showing this movie was like, like the last hurrah, the big movie era from, let's say, the 1920s to, let's say, 1970 was changing, was on its way out. And they did a really good job of showing how many people you would get going to the movies, grown-ups, old people, young people, little small children, everybody went to the movies. And it was, a big deal, a real big deal. And They did a good job of exploiting that and showing it.
That's interesting too, though, because I feel like somebody's going to be able to make a similar movie 30 years from now about 2025, because it's been the last hurrah of movies for my entire life. Like, it's a weird feeling of, like, you know, people do talk about, like, the number of human beings who went to see Gone with the Wind is like way more than any movie has ever been in the last 60 years, because, you know, that's just, again, a different time. That's, if you wanted to see a movie, that's what you had to do. And then, yeah, like you're saying, at this period now, TVs are at home and things are starting to not be the same. And then in the 80s, VHS came out. And it's like, well, now we really don't have to go to the movie theater. And then, like I was saying, in 2005, 2006, it was the end of film projectors and it's all turning digital. But now we're still in 2025, and this type of stuff is happening, like I was saying at the start. This stuff that John Goodman was doing, that's real. They're doing that now, again, because it's like, we got to do something. We got these 4D movies that do all this rumble in the seats and all this silly crap, but they're still not gone. I thought for sure movies would be gone by now, especially after COVID. I'm like, there's no way, even just from a real estate perspective, you wouldn't put something else in these huge spaces, but they're still there. So it's like, are they ever going to go away?
Well, they still have movie theaters, but it's not the same as every small town had a movie theater.
Right.
Even in our little city here, we had the Gaiety, which was the fancy dance place, and it had the big fancy upstairs balcony, and it had the curtains at the front. It almost looked like a stage. Beautiful big theater. And then you had the Capitol, which everybody called the Laugh and Scratch, because, it was kind of low life, and the seats had been there probably since about, 1930, and they were all leather and cracked, and all your B-grade movies went there, and anything that was a decent movie didn't show at the Laugh and Scratch Capitol. So we had at least
where was that?
Two theaters. That was on King Street, and the Gaiety was on Queen, down by where all those restaurants are, or like the Playhouse, not too far away from the Playhouse. And it was a real big deal to go to the movies.
But I mean, I guess that's what I think will be interesting for people of the future. I think they still will look back to now as it's not the same. But it's not over till it's over, and somehow it's not over. Somehow it's still there.
Yeah,
and when I was overseas, it was way in Taiwan and in Korea. The movie theaters are still huge. They're still just enormous, massive, big as ever. So who knows, man? Maybe they'll just somehow the fundamental act of going to the movie theater is good enough to not just want to watch everything at home. But I mean, it's certainly in rough times right now, but it's still not over, which is just amazing to me. It's like, I really honestly thought in my lifetime movie theaters would be gone, and now I'm not sure. Now maybe not.
Well, it was an excellent movie.
Yeah, so I did a little research while we were watching it, just the nuts and bolts, because it's so confusing. So the first thing I saw was a pretty cheap movie, about $15 million, but it only made $9 million. And it's like, oh, all right, that sucks, but that happens a lot of times, and it's okay, because those movies make up their money on home video or whatever. But with this movie, again, like I was saying, none of my friends know this movie. No one ever talks about it. Just every 4 or 5 years, it comes up. Somehow I just hear somebody reference it, and I'm like, that sounds interesting. What is this movie people sometimes rarely talk about that I'm not, why don't I have any awareness of what this is? And then I saw that the reviews are incredibly good, a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, where I was saying to you how that's because it's a percentage of all critical reviews. If something gets a 70%, I feel like it's an okay movie. 93% is a really high amount. Most movies wouldn't get that. So it's like, what the heck happened? Why is this movie, everyone liked it, nobody went to see it, and now no one seems to remember it? And just basically, it seems that just bad luck, where the production company that was making it went out of business halfway through. Universal picked it up, did pay to finish it, but they just didn't promote it. And that's kind of the ultimate irony, is since this whole movie is about a promoter, is about a guy who, how do we get butts in seats? How do we get people to show up? And the movie itself is the ultimate evidence that, if you don't get promoted, if you don't have the billboards and you don't have the bus ads and you don't have the TV commercials, nobody goes to your movie. And even worse, nobody remembers your movie. Advertising, as sick as it is, if you ever get to make a movie, whoever you are out there, put as much money into advertising as you can. You can't spend too much on advertising, because if you don't, this is what happens. You make a great movie and no one remembers it. And that's just sad and weird feeling. But anyway, I'm glad I saw it.
Well, if I was, let's say, go back to 1961, 62, whenever it was, wouldn't matter if I was a little kid, teenager, grown up, old person, I would have loved to see that movie.
With this movie or Mant?
Mant.
Oh, Mant.
With not just the movie Mant, because, there's been any number of those creature-type movies out there, but all that activity going on with the rumbling seats and the smog coming out and the creature running through the audience and beating up some guy. Hey, that would have been just fabulous. I would have loved it.
Well, I love, too, because, I think the two obvious touchstones are the The Incredible Hulk, you know, he was too close to gamma radiation tests and turned into the Incredible Hulk. And then Spider-Man got bit by a radioactive spider. Now he's a spider mutant superhero. But in this case, they're like, both of those are too, nah, not enough. That's not plausible. This guy got bit by a radioactive ant while radiation from dentistry was being zapped. Yeah. Both things had to happen at the exact same time. And that's how he became Mant.
It's the fly. Right. The fly theme all over again.